I was visiting when I first came to the West Coast. I had a striking experience. I was walking through San Francisco. I had come out to the West Coast not knowing why. I was living in England. I knew I had to move to the West Coast of North America, but didn't know why. I just went because I knew I had to go. I had something to do there, but I didn't know what. Later it turned out that the book was written here, and I needed to be in this energy field for the book to come out of me to be written. But I didn't know that at the time. I just went, and I was walking aimlessly through the streets of San Francisco. And suddenly I got lost, and I got deeper and deeper into an area that would be described, a part of the city that would be described as dangerous. But I'm fairly good at being invisible, so I just walked through. Nobody seemed to notice me, and so I didn't feel threatened. And I saw this. People were hanging around at street corners, perhaps some were on drugs. There was a state of great sluggishness, but also anger underneath it. And strange, this energy field that I walked through, great heaviness. And then I walked on a few more, 3, 4, 5 more blocks, and suddenly I was in this department store on Union Square, where everybody was purposeful and neatly dressed and alert and talking about business and very all concerned with the material, of course, getting this done, and we must do this and get it. And everything was nice and nice, clean, good quality food. And what planet have I just been to a few minutes ago? That's polarities, and one creates the other. So North America was the beginnings. People come to create a new world for themselves, so they became very concerned with, at first it was survival, and then they created material. They had to put all their energy into material creation, and their focus became that. And somehow when your total focus is there, you lose a balance. And then the other polarity pops up from behind you. That which you had denied pops up from behind, and there it is. So it's moving beyond polarities, and that's why we are here. And moving beyond polarities is to allow, to some extent, polarities exist in the mind and in the world, the tension between opposites. But it does not have to be a hellish tension between opposites, as it is in some places. We are not demanding that there should be no polarities, because the manifested universe is held in place by opposites and the tension between opposites. But the wonderful thing is that you, within yourself, you can go beyond the opposites, which are mind. Beyond, you can go beyond mind. That's why we are here. A level of consciousness is possible that is deeper than thought, that transcends thought, and that's why we are here. It is already arising here. And as that arises, you are beyond the polarities. Not your external form, you will still to some extent experience the polarities of the world. Pleasure and pain. There's a physical form that you move in and with, so to some extent, and of course you still have a mind, to some extent the polarities will always be there, but they become more benign. Your experience of the polarities in this world is no longer between extremes, but a benign manifestation of the polarities. There's life, as this transformation of consciousness happens, the world is experienced as a more benevolent place, not free of polarities, but they are become benign. And so part of allowing what is of course also allowing the polarities of the world to be there, recognizing that that's how it is. But they do not have to be the way they are now, as extreme forms of suffering. They become benign. You already have it to some extent. You have countries where there are enormous differences between wealth and poverty. Enormous wealth and enormous poverty. These are extreme manifestations of polarities. There's starvation, and a few blocks away, people live in great opulence. Extreme manifestation of polarity. And then you have countries already that are where there's polarities are still there, but they don't manifest that extremely, and they are more benign energy fields. So people are maybe they're not yet enlightened, all of them, but there's an arising consciousness. There's certain countries in Europe, it tends to be the smaller countries, where there is a more benign energy field. And there are polarities still, but much less extreme. You places like Denmark, Holland, relatively benign. So that's gradually what we are moving towards. Not abolishing the polarities, because the whole universe would collapse then. One day it will, and when the time comes, it'll disappear, and that's fine. Let's have a moment of stillness. Perhaps let's take a spoken question before I look again at the paper with another written question. Please, who is the next spoken question? Oh, you have, do you have a, is the question still there or has the question dissolved? Okay.
How do I, oh, it's on. First of all, we found this lying on the ground, so. There, I know. Over here. So you haven't been listening, is what you're saying. busted. You've mentioned in your book and even over the weekend the 21st century is sort of ready to sort of explode in this consciousness, and I hope that that's true. My question is, in the West, I mean, since Ralph Waldo Emerson and Thoreau, and I mean, as far back as Emmett Fox, there have been these writings, and there have been a following. Why now? Why do you think? Because there have been atrocities for 200 years, and yet there's, as a polarity, there's also been that you wouldn't know atrocities unless there's been incredible innovation. So why now?
Now, this, what I sometimes call the flowering of human consciousness, is not a totally new phenomenon. It is new only to the extent that the flowering of human consciousness now becomes possible on a wider scale. The flowering was already there. There were always flowers of human consciousness. There were always a few individual people here and there in whom this transformation already happened. And there were other individuals who could recognize, who were sufficiently free, not perhaps totally free of mind identification, but who were sufficiently free to see the truth of what these people were pointing to, whether those writers that you mentioned who lived here in the States or the earlier spiritual teachers. It's Jesus was a flowering of human consciousness, Buddha was a flowering of human consciousness, and some people who came after them and before them also expressed that flowering, but there were rare flowers here and there, a few. And then others who recognized in some obscure way, they recognized the truth, but they couldn't quite reach it. There's something there. They listened to the words of Jesus or the Buddha, and there's something there, but they couldn't reach it and they couldn't live it. And very quickly the mind came in and transformed those vital pointers to a new state of consciousness into a belief system. And that's the arising of religions. at the root of religion lies, of course, the realization of the essence of the transformation of consciousness. But the mind quickly came in and made it into new mind structures. The very pointers that pointed beyond were made into added mind structures and belief systems. So that's what happened. But you are right. Of course, it's been there. The flowering in itself is not new. Only flowering on a wider scale would be new. And that is what is happening now. Why now? Why didn't it happen before? Well, this is a why question. And Gestalt therapy, we know what they say about why questions. But let's just address it anyway. Why now and not before? Because now, if humans do not change now, it's reached such a point that soon they would self-destruct. The planet would become incapable of sustaining life. The human structures would move, so society, political, economic, would move into increasing madness, conflict, violence, chaos. Humans themselves would display increasing degrees of madness in their behavior. So we've reached a critical point. If it doesn't happen now, humans will disappear as a species. Maybe the planet may recover from human life eventually. That's possible. The planet is very resourceful. And then simply, humanity would simply be one little experiment in consciousness. No big deal on a universal scale. So it's happening now, and I sense that it is happening. From my position, of course, it's happening everywhere, because wherever I go, it's happening all around me. So I admit that I maybe have a slightly biased perspective on it. It's happening now on a wider scale because it has to happen. There's no more choice. The transformation of human consciousness is not a luxury now. It's a necessity. At the time of the Buddha and Jesus, okay, the planet was okay. It could sustain a few more thousand years of human madness. It wasn't that bad. Because the madness of the human mind was not yet amplified through the means of science and technology. So it wasn't that destructive. It was a little bit destructive, but it wasn't that bad. But now that the madness, not that science and technology are intrinsically bad, but they are put in the service of human madness. So they amplify the madness that is in the human mind. And that's why, it's wonderful in a way, because we see such an amplification of how mad the human mind is. It came to people as a shock for the first time after the First World War and the unbelievable destructiveness of that, because for the first time it was a huge war with massive technology. And after it finished, they were like, they stood there and looked at it and said, "My, what have we done? My God, what was that?" There was a little bit of, like, this is totally insane. It's totally mad. And those people there were many European powers, had many colonies, India and so on. And some Indians had looked on Europe almost as a progressive place. We need to aim towards that also. And they were also suddenly in amazement. They saw, what is that? Do we want to go that way? And soon after came even more madness. So that's why it has to happen. If it doesn't happen, well, that's the end. That's okay too. Proof that it is happening is we are here. And this may be a relatively small gathering, but I am amazed at the rate at which the people who come to listen to this message, the number increases. It is normal, the average number for an intensive, which is what I call a four-hour meeting, is now 500 people. And there are some talks with far more people than that. Canadian national television came to film a gathering we had, interviewed me, and they put it on the national evening news. So that was to me a miracle. And I'd always been saying, our meeting is not going to be on the evening news tonight. No, 2.5 minutes. No, there wasn't much that one could say in 2.5 minutes, but there was a message coming through of something else that would have been inconceivable before, because they were putting something on the national news that was not news in the normal terms. News means there must be some disaster. A moment of stillness. Feel the inner body. I would like to address the second part of my answer to the question that I read earlier. Are there degrees of presence? We talked about the witness that arises, so you become aware of your mind structures. Yes, there are degrees of presence. What can we do to increase? What can we do to deepen our state of presence? Well, you can come here. You're doing it. We are here to deepen the state of presence. It is deepening. Yeah, but what else can we do? We can choose presence. Whenever you remember, you can step out of mind and choose presence. The more often you choose presence, the more it deepens. In a way, it doesn't matter so much how long you can stay in the state of presence. In a way, it matters more how often you can return to the state of presence. It's a continuous stepping out of one state of consciousness into another, stepping out of mental noise into presence, into the alertness. And then the good news is the state then deepens by itself. You no longer have to do that much. Allow the state to deepen. And allow is the key word. How do I allow the state of presence to deepen? And we come back to the primordial spiritual practice. Allow this moment to be as it is. Allow the isness of now, and the state deepens. And then the secret that happens, that true deepening is there when suddenly, from being a witness, there is an awareness of awareness, which we pointed to yesterday all day long, that you are suddenly aware of the field of awareness. You sense the underlying field of awareness, whatever you call it, stillness, presence, consciousness, in which the whole world happens, in which the sense perception happens, in which the sound of the sea happens. We did that last night by pointing to the sense perception of the sea, the ocean in the background, and a deeper background a stillness in which the noise happens. That stillness is the awareness. And that stillness suddenly is conscious of itself. That's true deepening. But so you don't have to do all that much. It's happening. Allow it to happen.
One of the things I've become aware of this weekend is two mind structures that really prevent me from going totally into your teaching. And so I was wondering if you could just comment. They're the two words that come up for me are responsibility and integrity. Responsibility for one's actions, like being in this moment is wonderful. But yeah. Then my mind goes, but well, what about the responsibility for what someone just did or the integrity in the action that they take? Could you comment on that?
Thank you. They are slightly abstract words, but they have a very, their root is very concrete. Responsibility, I suppose, is based on the ability to respond to the now. Right action, right response. So the implication is being present with what is, and then respond to what is out of that state of presence. That is being responsible. Integrity comes from Latin, and the root cause translated means to be one. So it is the state of being one with yourself, not living through a mentally created image that is problematic, but being at one with yourself in the same way that a flower or a cat, any animal or anything is in nature, is completely one with itself. The only species on the planet that is not one with itself is humans. The only species on the planet that have problems are humans. Animals can suffer, often at the hand of humans, but they don't inhabit a world of problems. They don't create, and they don't have an image of who they are. That is the state of not being at one with yourself, being two, because there's me and myself. I have a problem with myself. This applies to almost every human in the normal state of consciousness. They are a problem to themselves. And so you live, and it is normal to have a problematic relationship with yourself. The moment you have a problematic relationship with yourself, you have a problematic relationship with others. And life becomes problematic. Integrity is to be one with yourself. Responsibility is the ability to respond to what is, which is only there when you are present. So don't try to find some abstract answer, don't make it into an abstract question, because then it becomes mind stuff. You cannot take responsibility for somebody else, of course. You can only respond out of your own, out of the state of presence to what is. You may respond to what somebody else does, but you cannot be responsible for that person. All you can do is be responsible for your own, and the action that flows out of the state of presence is always an aspect, the essential basis for the action that flows out of the state of presence is allowing this person to be, to behave in whatever way they are behaving. It is most likely that they will display some degree of human unconsciousness because they are part of the human condition. So to expect that humans around you should not display any unconsciousness, should be in a state of integrity, should be responsible for what they do, should know better, should be enlightened ultimately, that's, you're creating a problem for yourself if you expect that. And suddenly, if you go through life in that expectation, you have a personal and reactive relationship to other people's unconsciousness. You're expecting something from them, and they are not delivering. So you are reacting. Your personal self, sense of self, reacts and makes an identity for them out of whatever degree of unconsciousness they display. And then that becomes a person who is such and such and so and so. So it's not, and that's also, there's no compassion cannot arise anymore because you have reacted and you've made an identity for that display of unconsciousness and made a person out of it. By doing it, you yourself have become trapped through your reactivity, you become trapped in a reactive me, and that says, you are making me unhappy. Your lack of responsibility is making me unhappy. I demand that you make me happy and behave differently. And they don't. So, as you go through life, every day you'll encounter, you will meet egos, human beings disguised as egos. And when you don't know that, you meet pain bodies, which accompany the ego, an aspect of the emotional aspect of ego. They're everywhere. The world is full of them. You can't avoid them. But if you tell them that you should know better, it doesn't work. The only way beyond is to be in a non-reactive relationship, which is allow whatever behavior they display, that's what they display. What you still respond to this moment. Action may be needed at this moment. Maybe some person is putting his or her hand into your handbag and getting your wallet out. Now, it doesn't mean, okay, I allow this moment to be as it is. You could say, it's my spiritual practice. I don't want to hang on to anything. You could do that. But you don't have to. You can respond to that moment. You get hold of his hand and says, drop that bag. It's mine. Drop it. Okay. Right. Thank you. If you then say, you evil little thing, you're getting trapped in a world of mental labels. This is the beginning of an identity that you're imposing on that out of their behavior. They probably learned that when they were 6 years old from their father. It's normal to reach into people's handbags and take the money out. It's conditioned behavior. Nothing to do with that being. And it's possible that they too may wake up one day. They may wake up earlier than you. You could be a monk 30 years meditating in a monastery, and there's somebody in a prison cell who has murdered 5 people, who through the unbearable pressure of suffering suddenly wakes up. That's not fair. So you can't even predict, you can't even mentally say, oh, you have a long way to go if you reach into people's handbags. Who knows how long they have to go? We don't know. And I've seen the most unlikely humans go through transformation. Most unlikely. And others, they are so close. They've been meditating for so long, and they stay, well, no, not quite. I need a few more years of meditation before. For some humans, and really this takes us to another of the written questions, it's a question, or they brought two questions concerning spiritual practice. Is not spiritual practice necessary to live in that state of consciousness? It's one question. And does every spiritual practice necessarily involve time? Is not spiritual practice necessary to live in the true consciousness? It may be necessary for you. If it is appropriate, you will be practicing a spiritual practice. It is not absolutely necessary for everyone to go through the transformation through spiritual practice. People have gone through it without any practice. Now, you could say, of course, well, they must have practiced for many lifetimes for them to go through that into liberation with what is no practice. Ramana Maharshi had one brief death experience when he was lying on his bed at age 16 or 17 and was liberated. And there was no spiritual practice leading up to that. Of course, one might say, well, he must have practiced for many lifetimes. Who knows? That is possible. But the fact remains, for some, spiritual practice is appropriate. For others, spiritual practice is life. Spiritual practice is the suffering that they go through. And that was the case with me. The suffering was, I didn't know I was engaged in spiritual practice, I was just suffering. But that was the teacher, a very harsh teacher. The suffering became so intense that I couldn't live with myself any longer. Then the self popped. The burden of the self, the me, was gone. And for others, it involves a process. It is rare for this to happen all at once. For most people, it is the liberation is a process, and then perhaps the final step is the one, a last letting go. And for those who are involved in spiritual practice, the final step is often letting go even of their spiritual practice. But they had to go through that, and then they see even that is not it. And they let go even of that, and that's the final step. Or, after years of spiritual practice, life gives you one more deep crisis, one more deep suffering, and then it happens. It is unlikely to happen as the direct result of spiritual practice, that spiritual practice would then become like a course that you need to, there's levels of attainment, and that you could finally graduate up to liberation. It's not that neat. It doesn't work that neatly. It would be nice. It doesn't work that neatly. There's something, life is vaster than that, than any practice, and it, perhaps in the midst of your practice, it'll knock you. The Buddha was involved in practices for many years, trying out every practice, visiting teachers, becoming good at every practice, going from one workshop to another. It wasn't called that then, but it means exploring. And then he said one day, he no longer, his desire to get somewhere became so frustrated. And he dropped future. This is it. And he sat under the tree. future dropped away from him completely. And this can happen to others who may have be very close to death. It could happen then, because death is also a dropping away of future, unless you have a very strong belief, or I am going to carry on in the next lifetime. But that doesn't help you if you're unenlightened. You're trapped in another form of delusion. If you don't know who you are in this lifetime, you won't know it in the next lifetime. So spiritual practice may be appropriate. And now there's the question of time involving spiritual practice. The danger and the drawback with many spiritual practices is that the practice also gives you time. Time to get better at it. Time to achieve the desired result, which of course is a future goal that you need to achieve, which is the mindset of needing the future to find myself. There are certain practices which work beautifully without that, and they tend to be very simple. The more complicated a practice, the more steps it has, the more likely it is to give you time and future. One could say that we have been engaged in spiritual practices here, very simple spiritual practices, when we listen to the sound of the ocean, when we become aware of the awareness in which that sound happens, you could call that spiritual practice. When you go out here and look at a plant in the state of stillness, you could call that spiritual practice. When you say yes to whatever arises, you could call that spiritual practice. And yet it is more than just spiritual practice. It is a way of living. It is the liberated way of living. So while you are not yet continuously rooted, dwelling in the liberated way of living, the liberated life emerges periodically in you, and you're suddenly totally present. Then it becomes obscured again. And then you choose presence again. So while you move from unconsciousness to consciousness and back and forth, you could say that every time you choose presence, that is some form of spiritual practice. Until it becomes your normal state. And of course that's the end of spiritual practice. Because you are continuous spiritual practice then, if you still want to use the term, you're in continuous practice. You do not need to remember very much of what has been said. It's too simple anyway. It's not much that you can get hold of. What really matters about this gathering is the field of presence, and that's not memorable. That's already there in you.